General Pai Kril III.
Especially at the hands of the North Koreans.
Was there any discussion or advocacy whilst you were there of the use of nuclear weapons against your enemy?
No, none at all.
What about the equipment which you had in Korea? Were you satisfied with the equipment or not?
Well, of course, one's never fully satisfied with equipment. The 25-pounder did extremely well. One of the problems was getting a gun with a comparatively flat trajectory to get its shells to land on the reverse side of a hill, because if you're defending in a hill country, you get behind the hill as far as you can on the reverse slope. Therefore, it's very difficult to get your shells. Mortars were invaluable, and the 25-pounder was not designed for shooting at high angles, but somehow, by means of incremental charges and various other things, we did get it to get behind hills. We always had what's called a dead ground trace, so that one knew any positions of the enemy held which you could not get your artillery on because of the steepness of the slope. The our sets for World War II, our radio sets, and they worked very well. They were old, but they worked very well. The vehicles seemed to stand up to it. Our ROPs were very basic. We were very jealous of the American Austers. They had beautiful little machines that had heating and so on in them. Our ROPs had nothing in the way of heating, and a pilot going up for an hour or so in winter conditions more or less had to be dug out as an icicle at the end. So that was not a very good bit of equipment, although from a flying point of view it did its job magnificently well. And the ROP was a supremely valuable unit with the division. They flew extensively, and of course there was practically no enemy air, and so they were very bold. They used to fly right behind the enemy lines. Of course later, as the lines stabilized and became static, then the Chinese got rather better bringing up some lightly anti-aircraft or some machine guns and so on to fire in the air. They did hit one or two of our machines, and we had to be a bit more circumspect. But you see, they were invaluable at seeing if there was a hostile attack brewing, seeing where the enemy were firing from, giving us warning of this, that, and the other. So that ROP was the most invaluable flight. And I think by and large the equipment, it was old, but I think it seemed to do its stuff pretty well.
What was the level of casualties to the Commonwealth Force whilst you were there? Was it more or less than you expected?
I think it was much as expected. If one had an attack, then of course one suffered fairly heavy casualties. In static warfare, you don't have many casualties unless you start putting in raids to capture prisoners or raids to capture hills and entice the enemy to attack you and then fire back at him. So I think we kept the casualties down remarkably well. One of the biggest source of casualties at one time were the space heaters. Because, I mean, to keep warm in those hills in winter was anybody's business. And they had these space heaters, and at one time we had a lot of people blowing themselves up on these wretched space heaters.
What was a space heater?
Well, it was just a sort of petrol-driven heater.
Were there many accidents whilst you were there?
On those space heaters?
Of any kind?
We had two Australians, I think, killed by lightning. I mean, I don't call that an accident on top of a hill. That were the usual traffic accidents, but I don't think anything abnormal in the way of accidents, except, as I say, at one time, these space heaters trying to keep warm.
What about bombing of one's own troops from the air?
No, we had very little. They were very good. One had the occasional mistake, of course, but I can't remember any severe casualties from our own fire. One of the most interesting things I remember was because there's tremendous activity by the American Air Force. They would come and strafe and bomb and napalm the front, and occasionally you'd have a fighter pilot shot down just behind the lines, and he would, if he'd been seen to bail out, they would then stage an operation. They would send a helicopter in over the enemy lines. They would escort it with fighters. We would bring down fire just before we knew they were due, to try and keep the place generally subdued. The helicopter would then nip over, the fighters would come in and strafe all around, and believe it or not, they usually got their men out and without being caught themselves. I've seen that happen several times. One of the things we used to discuss of an evening over a drink when nothing much else was happening was what the political directive of the United Nations command might be, because he must have been very inhibited. I personally think should have happened should have been that we should have put through an attack and taken the neck of land above Pyongyang, the narrowest portion across North Korea. That was well away from the Chinese frontier, and therefore there were the political inhibitions of the Yalu would not have affected us. We'd have had a large chunk of North Korea incorporated in the south, and one can't help feeling that in the course of time the rest of North Korea might have been unviable and come in with us. And that would have been a perfectly feasible military operation. Whether it was ever considered, I don't know, but we all thought that would have been a sensible thing to do. And as I think I've said already, if we'd got a corps teed up, and we could have punched a hole through quite easily, and having done that, I'm quite sure we could have rolled up the Chinese army, which was nothing like a match for ours with mobility and air power and so on. We could have captured that line and held that against all comers, and then you would have had a much more viable career with which to deal. But we had no idea of what the political direction to the United Nations commander was. I know we had a great admiration for General Ridgway. He was a very great general. And I think when he came and took over the command of the army, when General Walker was killed, I think it had an electrical effect on the whole of the American, British, Korean armies, because he was a superb chap. Then, of course, he handed over to General Van Fleet, and he took over the job from General MacArthur of the United Nations Command. And he was a great chap, I think. I have a great admiration for him. But what his political instructions are, I've never known, and it would always be most interested to know what they were.
Why did you like Ridgway so much?
Well, because he was a great, fine general. He was a great, fine man. and an extremely good general.
So what period did your period of service in Korea cover? Which years?
Well, I arrived in May 1951 and I left in November 1952, so I had the best part of 18 months.
Did you feel that the war was nearing its end when you left?
Well, I think that the whole of the time we were there, these talks were going on, and as far as I remember, towards the end of my time, they looked like coming to some conclusion, but one got to the state where one simply didn't know, and I won't say didn't care, but it's one of those things like the bypass of this village, which we always hoped coming and never does.
Were you glad or sorry to leave Korea?
Very, very sorry. I enjoyed that. I was always very sorry to leave a command of really good soldiers. Although naturally I'm very glad to be going home. It's very sad, to be leaving a thing of that sort. I always like to see a thing completely through.